I also want to say that I will miss Danielle, and I've thought about this several times, that Newville is like, I think, maybe our first example of Newville going out into the world. And I can't think of a better place than Washington, D.C., for a little piece of Newville to go to. So this morning I'm reading from Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 23. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 23. I also, I'm thinking about the families in Newtown, and Tim and I have a keen awareness of you go through life and you set up your own meaning of life and your understanding of how things are. And the loss of a child just tosses everything out the window. And so you just kind of reformulate your thinking of about the world. And these families are in the process of doing that. And it's a town that just probably has such a feeling of grief and sadness and reorganization. And I can't even begin to imagine. I guess I can begin to imagine a little bit of that. But this is a great hope that I'm reading about in Colossians. This is the hope. It's almost like that reorganization. My prayer for those families is that they have like a new trajectory, I guess, a new something to focus on. And that would be this hope that I'm reading about this morning. The centrality of Christ, Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For everything was created by him in heaven and on earth, the visible and the invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and by him all things hold together. He is also the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might come to have the first place in everything. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile everything to himself by making peace through the blood of his cross, whether things on earth or things in heaven. Once you were alienated and hostile in your minds because of your evil actions, but now he has reconciled you by his physical body through his death to present you holy, faultless, and blameless before him. If indeed you remain grounded and steadfast in the faith and are not shifted away from the hope of the gospel that you heard, this gospel has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and I, Paul, have become a servant of it. May God bless that reading of his word.
So keep your Bibles open, please, to Colossians. Colossians was written by Paul to confront a heresy, a colossal error. That's how you can remember what Colossians was written about. Colossal error. Because what was happening was there was a hybrid faith coming. There was a combination of the pagan faith and the Christian faith and Judaism. And they were trying to put that together and meld it into one faith. And Paul had to confront that here in Colossians. Well, we're talking about the hope of the gospel today, which is synonymous with the hope of Christmas. Let me tell you a couple of stories first. Because you have to understand reconciliation and what that means. On Black Locust Farm, if you tour the woods with me sometime, you will see various and sundry building projects perpetrated by the boys. Different tree houses, several, forts, campfires, etc., sprinkled throughout those 16 acres. And Timmy was very much involved with these projects, and Tori and Tom and Tad. They would collaborate on some of these tree houses. And they were out there hammering away with wood that really wasn't that stable sometimes, but they were having a great time. And they were building this treehouse up off the ground a considerable ways. Talking about reconciliation, what it means. Unbeknownst to them until this very moment, after they were in the house in their jammies and they were safe in their beds, I would go out to these treehouse projects. I wouldn't change anything. Everything that they did was left, but I would make it work out. I would take out some material and some hammer and some nails, and I would make sure that what they had done was going to work out, was going to be safe, was going to hold them and support them. Never told them this, because I wanted them to be creative, and I wanted them to build this treehouse according to their designs. I didn't want them to think that Dad, even though they know this about me so much, I'm such a micromanager of their lives, and I've tried to back off on that. Boys, as much as I can. But I wanted to make sure that I reconciled their work. See, I didn't take anything away, but I made some things work out for them in these tree houses. And to understand what reconciliation is, reconciliation means you don't do away with anything. You make it fit. You have to work it in somehow. You reconcile bank statements. Teresa's always saying, I got to reconcile the bank statement. And I think that means, I have never reconciled a bank statement. And I think when you reconcile a bank statement, you have to take all of the figures there and the numbers and make sure that they fit into their proper place, right? You have to do this. I try to do that once in a while with things, reconcile things at the office, some statements and bills that I have to pay. You know, I'm really bad at it. And I got to tell you, sometimes I just make numbers disappear. I can do that. They just go off into the biosphere somewhere because I don't know what to do with them. But I don't think that's really allowed. And I do that because I'm very poor in math, very poor. Which is surprising because here we have the twins. Tad is teaching the highest math here at Clear Fork, and Tommy is the actuary at Nationwide. And I'll tell you, that's math that is off the scale. And Tori, I think, is more like me. I don't know how good you are in math, Tor, but I don't know that you know you are. Maybe you are, but I'm not at all. So the twins must have inherited this from Teresa. Because I think you're good in math. Yeah, now see, but you know, here, a sidebar. I ask the boys all the time, who's smarter, me or Teresa?
They're smart enough to answer correctly.
They are. They're smart enough to... Well, it's obvious, isn't it? Who's smarter? Yeah, yeah. So that's reconciliation. Reconciliation is you take what's there and you have to work it in and make it fit. Well, as I said, Christmas is a time of hope. And I think when your children, my sons, they would make their Christmas list for Santa and they would hope that they would get those things. They would hope that things would work out for them. And I will say that I think they were never disappointed on this front. I thought, just as long as I had the ability to do that for the boys, you know, because there comes a time in life when you can't do that for your children anymore. I'm reminded of the line, and I know I'm rambling here, but it's been a really busy week, so I am kind of rambling. I'm reminded of the line in To Kill a Mockingbird where Jeb has just seen something really unpleasant in the world. Bob Ewell did something really mean to somebody, really hateful, and Jeb saw it, and Atticus Finch comes out, and he realized that Jeb had seen that, and he says, I wish I could shield you from all of the bad things in the world, son. He said, but I can't. And I thought how wonderful it would be as parents. What if you had the ability If I had the ability to take those four little boys that I raised and forever keep them in a position where I could just make things work out for them, that I could make their hopes come true. But a time comes when that stops. You know, that's been one of the hardest things for me as a father, to come to grips with that realization that I can no longer make sure that their hopes come true and that things work out for them, and that I can reconcile everything in their little lives like I did with those tree houses. What do we hope for as adults? You know, little children at Christmas hope they get what's on their list. I thought about my own hopes. And I thought, what do I hope for now? What has changed in my life? And I think that what I tumbled to, and see if you share this. I hope that things work out. Do you ever get that with your family, your relationships, that you just hope things work out? I remember when Ray was ill, Teresa's father and Barry's father. And the first time I'd heard this statement, really, Teresa was talking to Ray's mother. And Ray had a life-threatening illness that eventually did take his life. And Ray's mother said, wouldn't it be nice if things would just work out for our family in this respect? And that hooked me when she said that, Teresa and Barry and Barb. That I thought of that, and I thought, wouldn't it be if things would just work out? You think of your own families and your children and your relationships and your parents. What more could we want than if things would just work out for us? And we say that to each other too, don't we? If someone you know is in trouble, and I deal with a lot of your troubles happily, because you come to me with these things, and I'm honored by that. And I think that what I would say to you and what we say to one another when we're counseling people is we say, I hope that works out for you, don't we? Well, what's that got to do with Christmas? Well, it has everything to do with Christmas, and here's why. You know, why is Christmas the singular holiday? It is, isn't it? It is the singular holiday. I don't care what the secular progressivists want to call it. They celebrate it too. And it's because, and this passage brings it out to me, we intuitively know that we're celebrating the birthday of one who makes things work out for us. We're celebrating one who takes our life's building projects and the mistakes that we make and the faults that we have and the dangers that are inherent with us having free will, and they are many. And we have one who comes along when we're sleeping and reconciles things, makes things work out. That's the birthday we're celebrating. Well, who is this person? What's he like, and how does he do this? And I found nothing as powerful as this poem in Colossians by Paul. I think there's some hope held for you today in this message. And when I was meditating on this message, and I'm not arrogant enough to think that I have any kind of a silver bullet solution for the problems of the world, but I know that Scripture does. And I thought of these parents in Newtown at the Sandy Hook School. They're not ready to hear this, what I'm going to talk about today. But they will be. They will be. And it's like Teresa said, their lives have to go on another trajectory right quick. And this passage gives us all that hope. of this one who can reconcile and fix things for us, make things work out. Verse 15, who is it? Who's Jesus of Nazareth, whose birthday we celebrate in 2 days? Well, Paul says unceremoniously, get this straight, he's the image of the invisible God. Now, that is a profound statement. John says no one's ever seen God, but his Son has revealed him to us. So he's the image of the invisible God. We see him. We see the Creator in this man. He's the firstborn over all creation. Over all creation, meaning he controls everything in this created order. That's who we're dealing with. Why? Why, Paul? Why is he the firstborn? How do you know that? How, Paul, do you know that he's the image of the invisible God? Well, because by him everything was created. Where? In heaven and earth. The things you can see, the things that you can't see. Those are the things you can't see. Isn't that the big one? Things I can see, I can get a grip on, and I can maybe understand it, and I can bring my poor muddling ways into trying to fix it. It's the things I can't see. You got some things that dog your steps that you can't see? You know what I mean? Well, Paul describes those things you can't see. The invisible. Thrones, dominions, rulers, authorities. What has authority over my life and over your life? You know what it is? It's the invisible things. And we're celebrating the birthday of one who created that. Created that thing that controls me and controls you, that invisible thing that nobody else knows about and nobody else can see and that you've not told anybody. All things have been created through him and for him. Now, don't take a facile reading of this, and you read things, and you think of things. You think of tangible things, because that's easy. To serve a God like that is easy. But we're talking about a God, when he says all things have been created through him and for him, Paul is talking about the things that you can't see that are invisible and the things that come into our life, like the thing that came into those dear families in Newtown, Connecticut on a Friday morning that they could never have seen. And we're finding out that even that, this one that we worship, he's over that. He is before all things. He's before it. That means you got something in your life, this invisible authority, that you look at as impossible, and I'm sure those families in 48 hours are going to wake up on a Christmas morning and they are going to say, this is impossible. I woke up on those mornings. I get it. The only way we can, and I know you're trying to fix things in your life, I did. I know you're scrambling to make things right, to reconcile things. The only way I dealt with this was I understood verse 17, that even that, he's before it. He's ahead of it. He's got it, in other words. He's there. Here's him, and here's then the thing. And in order for me to deal with this, I have to go through the one that's before it. You see that? He's before all things. Oh, okay, well now this next statement. I don't think I like, and I'll bet you don't, and I'll bet the families in Newton, Connecticut, don't like, but I had to come to grips with this and by him all those things hold together. There's some things in my life I don't want held together. I would like them to be gone. But that's not reconciliation. No, Paul says we serve this invisible God that is now visible, and he has the juice to take all those things, the murder of babies in a school by Satan. Yes. And he's able to take those things and hold them together somehow. None of those things fly off the edge of your life. We want them to. That's our solution. Why do I know that? Because the tomb was empty. There was a battered, tortured, bloodied body that on Easter morning was resurrected to a new mode of existence, but it was the same body. And all of the things that happened to that body were held together and reconciled somehow, some way. What was the reconciliation there? We're going to find out in a minute. And Jesus comes to his friends and his followers. I love this passage. And they doubt him, you know, Thomas. And Jesus says, all things are held together. And here, you see, I still have the wounds. The wounds aren't gone. That's hopeful to me in a way that I can't explain. That the scars that we carry in life, that the disappointments, the failures, the nailing up of the treehouse that isn't really correct according to our way, yet we get up in the morning and we come out and it's still there and it still works and the scars are there. When Jesus healed the paralytic that was brought to him by his friends, remember? Four friends led him down through the roof. He's a paralytic. Talk about him holding all things together. He heals the paralytic, and then he says a powerful statement to this man. Remember what it was? Teresa does. He says, you pick up your mat that you've been lying on for years, and you take it, carry it with you back home. What do we want to do with those things? What do we want to do with those mats? See, that's not reconciliation. We serve a powerful God here that does not have to compromise. No, he holds all things together, even though we want them to fly off the periphery of our lives and act as if it never happened. And God, if you are God, take this away. Oh, by the way, he's also the head of the body, the church, which means, what's the message we have for the world? What's the message we have for these dear families in Newtown, Connecticut? If you're in the church of Jesus of Nazareth, if you're in the covenantal family, he's the head of that. And he is the one who can take those things and hold them together for you, because we can't. lot of things in my life I cannot hold together. And it's exhausting to keep trying, isn't it? But we serve one, and the world and the message of hope that we have to give at Christmas is we serve one who holds those for us. He's the beginning. He's the firstborn from the dead. You talk about reconciliation? You talk about a powerful reconciliation? First demonstrated by God through this man, he's the firstborn from the dead. He's the beginning. He's the beginning of God's reconciliation. It started Easter morning. God's future came rushing forward to meet us in the present. And what does his future look like? All things in your life are going to be held together and reconciled. And they're going to work out. A crucified Messiah? He's no Messiah. That was the problem. Because they could not understand how a crucified Messiah is ever going to lead them out from the control of the pagans. We got the same thing in our lives, don't we? You got something crucified in your life? And you look at that crucified thing and you say, no way. Well, what? So that he's the beginning of firstborn. Why? What's the purpose? Verse 18, so that he might come to have first place in everything. How beautiful. I want him to have first place in everything in my life. Because if he has first place, those things are behind him. Because I can't deal with them. And the world is trying to deal with the things. And boy, they got a lot of solutions for it. And some of them work for a while. These families in Newtown, these dear parents, are going to claw and scratch and scramble for anything to deal with this. He has to have first place in everything. Verse 19. How could this be? How can a man named Jesus of Nazareth come from the dead, have first place in all things? Well, very simply, because God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in him. You see, there it is. There it is, church of Jesus. If the fullness of God dwells in you, there's nothing. Absolutely nothing. What does Paul say in Romans 8? He says, what are we to say about these things? If God is for us, who or what can be against us? And if the fullness of God dwells in you as a member of the church, God takes those things and he reconciles. He makes it work. It works out. Now, that's not the way I would like him to work. I will confess this to you right now. If God would take my advice, and Paul also quotes an Old Testament verse on that. He said, who can instruct God? 2 Corinthians. Who can tell him what to do? I would rather say to God, now here's how I think you should work, and here's how I think you should be the deity, and this is what they said to Jesus of Nazareth too. They said, this is how you should be a Messiah. You need to take us out from under the thumb of the pagans, the overlords, the Romans, now. You need to take that thing out of our life. That makes sense to our human thinking. And I say to God, you need to take these things out of my life. That would work so much better, God. And God says, no, I got something even more powerful than that and even better. You're going to take that mat. You're going to pick it up with you. God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him. And then through that death that this one experienced, he does something remarkable. How can a death do anything good? Well, it does. What's it do? He reconciles everything to himself. He reconciles everything to himself. How? By making peace through the blood of his cross, whether things on earth or things in heaven, invisible things, visible things. Let me paraphrase this for you. God takes all of the broken and dislocated things of his universe. People, relationships, things, animals, atoms. And he properly fixes it. And he properly fits it into a radiant harmony where they all fit and they all work. That's the God we serve. That's the birthday we're celebrating in 2 days. The one who's got the juice to do that in your life. Broken things and dislocated things. I deal with dislocations. And when something is dislocated, when something's fractured, actually sometimes that's easier. You immobilize, it heals. A dislocation is a part of the body that ceases to function in harmony with the things around it. Ceases to function in harmony with the things around it. And that's the problem in our lives, the dislocated things. The things in your life that have ceased to function in harmony with everything else in your life. And we hate it. No, Paul says, well, God takes that and he properly fixes it and he properly fits it in to a radiant, harmonious display. What's Paul say about that in Corinthians, the third chapter? He says, this is what we're going to experience on that day. He says, your work will survive if it's precious stones. If it's wood, hay, and stubble, it's going to be burned up. And those things that he held together for us, and those dislocated things in my life, we're going to come through, and we're going to see it, and we're going to say, of course. Of course. What's God say in Revelation? I'm going to make all things new. Not taking them away. I'm going to make them new. That's the God we serve. That's whose birthday we celebrate in 2 days. And you were once alienated and hostile in mind because of your evil actions. You know what I think alienates the world to God and makes them hostile to God is when things like Newtown, Connecticut happen. What is the refrain that we heard from the secular progressivist about this tragedy? What was the question they asked? Exactly. How can God, boy, they don't miss a chance to denigrate God, do they? How can God allow this to happen? And as a result of that happening, the world says, well, I'm going to be alienated and hostile because I don't want to serve a God that would allow a little six-year-old to be riddled by Satan. You know what the problem is? We have to come back to this, that even though we live in a fallen world where all of that is tainted, that there's a day of reconciliation and where things are going to work out, even when we can't possibly imagine it. But now he has reconciled you by his physical body through his death to present you. Here's what we're going to be. Here's reconciliation. Holy and whole, faultless and blameless. No matter what we've done in the body. That thing that you've done that you blame yourself for. That thing that you've done that you carry fault for. Paul says, nope. It's going to be faultless and blameless. Now, that is a powerful God. if indeed you remain grounded and steadfast in the faith, and here's the trick for me, and we'll finish with this. You're not shifted away from the hope of the gospel. How often does that happen to me? I hate to tell you how many times, and I'm ashamed of it. That I get shifted away from the hope of the gospel. That's exactly what the enemy wants to do to me. That's exactly what he wants, because you know what? If he can get me there, I become alienated and hostile to God. And then, you know what else? Who else I become alienated and hostile to? People. Oh, yeah. The enemy knows what he's doing. He's good. He shifts me away from the hope of the gospel. We need to stay grounded and steadfast there. How are you doing with that? Staying grounded and steadfast in the hope of the gospel. Well, how do you do that, Tim? Well, I'm going to tell you. Pretty complicated. Solitude, silence, study. How are you doing with that? Because that's staying grounded, and you will not be shifted away from the hope of the gospel. This gospel has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and I, Paul, have become a minister of it. How's that? Did Paul and other evangelists like him go out and preach to every conceivable creature, rock and tree, insect, plant, animal? In all of creation, Paul says, all of creation has heard this message. Of course not. Something cosmic happened Easter morning when reconciliation began, and it sent resonances out throughout the universe like shock waves. Every creature is aware reconciliation has begun. Things are going to work out. And that is why we intuitively, as a nation and as a world, celebrate this birthday, because we feel that things are going to work out. Let's pray.